Rabosai, we're on Daf Ayin Ches.
Rabbi?
Yes. Now, we're on Daf Ayin Ches Amud Aleph, and we're counting down from the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines. 8 lines down from the top. And we start with Amar Rav Huna. Now, our sugya is a continuation of the sugya that we began a few days ago called Miut, which means that if you have a kosel that separates one chatzah from another, unless there's a window or a pesach between one chatzah and the other, you cannot make an eruv between the two chatzeres. This kosel, this wall that's 10 tefachim high, is a mechitza that absolutely separates the two chatzeres. Unless the mechitza, this kosel, is less than 10 tefachim high. And that's called miut, where we're going to try to attach things to the kosel to make it easier to climb the kosel, climb up the wall from somewhere in the middle of the wall, etc. And that's going to be a miut, which is, so to speak, diminishes the height of the kosel and therefore allows you to make an erev chatzeres between the two chatzeres on both sides of this wall. Now, it's very interesting. Rav Huna is a little bit off on a tangent. He's also dealing with the laws of miut, but in a totally different context. He's not talking about a derabanan of eruv chatzeros and how to, you know, overcome this impasse, this problem of a wall between two chatzeros that's too high. That's not Rav Huna's business of miut. He's talking about a real din d'oraisa where we need miut. And that's the status of Rishus HaYochid. If you remember, and we mentioned it more than once, the dimensions of Rishus HaYochid are twofold. Number one, it has to have mechitzos that surround it that are 10 tefachim high. And number two, it has to have a width of 4x4 tefachim. Now, what happens in a situation where you have a vested interest, and we'll try to explain why, but that's more the psychological or, you know, the physical reality of it, but that's not so fundamental. But you have an interest in being mevatel Rishus HaYochid, to undermine the status of a Rishus HaYochid. Let's say, for example, again, I don't know if this is a great example, but you have a pole, a pillar that shoots up vertically in the middle of a Rishus HaRab, and it reaches a height of 10 tefachim, and on the top, let's say there's a basket or something that has 4 tefachim in width. That basket now, insofar as it's being held up by a pole of 10 tefachim high, has the status of Rishus HaYochid, which would mean that if you want to throw something, and again, 10 tefachim is not all that high, you want to throw something, you know, and let it land in that basket, you're standing in Rishus HaRab, you're going to violate a Malacha D'oraisa of Hotzah. In this case, particularly, it's Hachnasa, but it doesn't matter. So now what you want to do is, you want to be Memayit. You want to, in a sense, diminish the height of that pole and make it lower than 10 tefachim. And it will now completely undermine the status of Rishus HaYochid. So again, it's not the miut that we've been discussing the last couple of days of a kosel that separates two chatzeros and the kosel is 10 tefachim high, so we put a ladder against the kosel, etc., etc. But rather we're talking about a pillar that's 10 tefachim high, and that makes a Rishus HaYochid, and now we want to diminish the size, the 10 tefachim height of that pillar, and make it ois Rishus HaYochid. Amar Rav Huna, Amud Rishus HaRabim. I would translate Amud as a pillar. I mean, if we get a chance, you could tell me if you have an English translation, I would call it a pillar. And Rachav Arba, this pillar, it doesn't even need a basket, like the case I gave you before. In the case of a thin pole, you'll need a basket that's 4 tefachim wide. But in this case, the amud, which is a pillar, has its own thickness. It's a thick pillar. And it's 4 tefachim wide. And therefore, if you throw something from Rishus HaRabim and it lands on top of this pillar, which is 10 tefachim high and 4 tefachim wide, you will have violated a Malacha Doraisa. So now he wants to be memayedit. So what does he do? Natsbo yosed kolshuhu miato. According to Rav Huna, all you need to accomplish your goal of miut and to be mevatel the status of this amud as a rishus hayochid is just simply to knock in a peg into this pillar. Again, I don't know exactly how you achieve that goal. If the pillar is made of stone and the peg is made of wood, it's going to be hard to knock it in. But let's assume the pillar is made of wood, or maybe the peg has a certain sharp end to it, and whatever it might be. But anyway, he was successful in his attempt. And now, since the peg that he attached to this amud is sort of interfering with the use of the amud, right? It sticks out like a sore thumb or a thorn in his side, whatever idiomatic phrase you want to use. Therefore, the amud is not considered 10 tefachim high. Omar of Adabar Ava, he comes to restrict and add another condition to validate this miut in order to be mevatel l'shem rishus hayochid. Ubegavoa shlosha. Where on the amud is he knocking in this peg? It cannot be within, I'll call it, I usually use this example, 2.9 tefachim of the ground level, because then we consider this peg midin lavu to be on the karka. It's not really on the amud, even though it's physically on the amud. And therefore, Avada Bar Ava adds the stipulation that if you want to add a peg of kolshu as a mute to this amud that's 10 tefachim high, you have to make sure that you bang in that peg at least at a height of 3 tefachim from the ground level. Otherwise, it's like non-existent. It's like part of the karka. Now, Rashi formulates it a little bit differently than what I said. He says that up to three tefachim, it's considered kigago shel amud. I'm just mentioning it in passing. I really need a lot more analysis to see why Rashi feels that you have to consider that ad shlosha tefachim, it's kigago shel amud. Honestly, I don't think Rashi means it literally. I mean, the amud is 10 tefachim high. So what do you mean a roof on top of the amud? I think Rashi means that it's like just attached to the amud, and it's like an addendum. It's not a separate peg that forms an obstruction. It's not an obstruction. It's part and parcel of the pillar. Abai v'rova, diamri travayu, afal pisha eno gavoa shlosha. Abai and Rava say that forget about the law of lavud over here that led Rav Adabar Ava to the conclusion that the peg has to be a minimum of 3 tefachim in height. Even if the peg is on the bottom of the amud, somewhere lower down, nevertheless, it's still memayit. And why is that so, my timer? Dilo mishtamish le. Because wherever that peg is, it's going to interfere with the use of the comfortable use of this pillar. In other words, you know, the pillar has a certain width to it, right? It's 4 tefachim wide. And that's what gave it the status of Rishus HaRabim. Well, you want to be able to enjoy the entire width and thickness of this pillar. But you can't do so because you knocked in a peg. The halachic status of lavud is not relevant in this case, say Abai Varova, because this peg is going to diminish your comfortable use of a 10 tfachim high amud, or a 4 tfachim wide amud. Rav Ashi Omer Afilu Gavah Shlosha. He says, no, I reject the entire halacha of Rav Huna, and the very fundamental principle of Rav Huna, that knocking a peg into a pillar undermines your use, your comfortable use of the pillar, and therefore it's memaited, and it makes it diminished, lower than 10 tefachim. I reject that. I don't care where you knock in the peg. It's not memaited. My timer, efshed the toli be midi. On the contrary, the peg enhances your use of the pillar. It doesn't detract. And why is that? Because you want to hang up your jacket or your hat, so you put it on this peg. The peg now is part of the amud. It enhances the amud. The idea of miut is to somehow change that gova and in a sense diminish the gova. So the gova works in one direction or another. Let's say, for example, back in the case of the kosel, the gova works in a way that it keeps you as a barrier from going into the other side, the chutzah on the other side. But if I set up a ladder or ziz, and all the cases that we discussed, that it's flat up against the kosel, and it's kavua, and it's weighty, and so forth and so on, then all I have to do is climb the rungs of the ladder in order to get to the other side of the kosel. So we see that this miut is a process by which we actually change the normal function of the kosel, or in our discussion, of the amud. And to be mamayit the amud, less than 10 tefachim, it means I no longer have the benefit of an amud that's so tall. And the answer is, says Rav Ashi, that adarab, on the contrary, when I knock in a peg, that's something that people do to enhance the use and improve the use of the amud. Let's just see how he translates amud into the English. Let me just see if I can give you a minute to...
A post.
Oh, he calls it not a pillar, but a post.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You see, I'll tell you why I'm a little bit uncomfortable with the word post. I don't know if the word post gives you the sense of the width. You know, a pillar is something that's wide. But who am I to disagree with the English translation? Well, let me just get the place, and we'll read it inside. Here it is. If a post stands in Rishus HaRabim and measures 10 tefachim in height and 4 tefachim in width, which constitutes a Rishus HaYochid, and he wedges a peg of any size on the top of the post. Again, I don't know what he means by the top of the post. It just has to be above 3 tefachim, according to the stipulation of Rav Ada. I don't know if it's on the top of the post. Anyway, miyutu. The post reduces the width of reduces the width of the post, rendering it an exempt area. Well, that's a nice embellishment. He says it becomes a makom ptur. In other words, we're not going from the status of Rishus HaYochid down to a status of Rishus HaRabim, but rather it's a makom ptur. And that's my favorite, you know, example of a fire hydrant. In other words, it's a fire hydrant is less than 10 tefachim high, and it's less than 4 tefachim in width. So once we reduce the dimensions of the amud, that's gavoa yud, and rochav arba, we end up with a makom ptur. Now, the exception to that rule is what's called rabim mekatvim olav. Do you remember that? Where the people, when they go through the shus rabim, and they're wearing a knapsack, right? Each one respectively is wearing a knapsack, and he needs to shift the weight of the knapsack from one side of his back to the other, so he'll do that process, which is called lekatev, on this low pole or post or whatever you want to call it. So that's Rabbi Makatfinal. But he's assuming now that it's not a case of Rabbi Mekatfin Olav, and therefore it has the status of an exempt area. Okay. Then we have Rav Adi Bar Rava's qualification, and he says that the peg has to be 3 tefachim high. If it's shorter, then it's part of the surface of the post. Okay, that's what we said, that it's part of the post itself. Abai Varova, even though the peg is not 3 tefachim in high, it still is part of the post. I'm sorry. Even though the peg is not 3 tefachim high, it still renders the top of the post as a makom patur. My timer, lo mishtamishle. Because that part of the surface, which is preempted by the peg, is not usable. So the surface cannot qualify as a rishus hayochid. What?
According to this, it's not that initially I thought the peg was just being plugged into the side of the pillar. But according to this translation, it seems as if it's being put into the top. So It's actually reducing the width at the top.
Yeah.
So I don't understand the 3 tefachim, because if the pole is 10 tefachim high, when you put the post in, if it's at the top, it can never go below 3 tefachim. So I don't understand that part of it.
Right. So I think he's saying that what? Just 1 second. I had it and I lost it. Yeah, what's the 3?
It only makes sense if it's on the side of the post.
Wait, just give me a minute on. 1 second. Ubegova shlosha. Oh, here it is. His translation, which I'm not sure is ours, is that the 3 tefachim relates to the size of the peg itself. So he's knocking a peg into the top of the pillar, or he calls it a post. And the question is, what is the size of the peg? According to Rav Huna, the size of the peg is zero, so to speak, meaning anything beyond zero. Why? Because the top surface of the post is 4 tefachim exactly. And as soon as he puts in any sort of peg, it's 4 tefachim minus. It's 3.99. And therefore, it's not a rishus hayoch. Comes along Abaye and Rava, and they say that I don't care. I'm sorry, I skipped this step. Comes along Rav Ada, and he says that if the peg itself is very short, then it... Now I understand the Rashi's gag business. Okay, now I didn't... Now it becomes part of the top surface of the post. It's not exactly lavud, but it's very similar to lavud, meaning if you have two objects that are within 3 tefachim, one or the other, then we close the gap between the two of them, so that if this peg on the top of the post is less than 3 tefachim, we're going to close that down and sort of flatten the peg and consider it as the roof. It's actually part of the roof structure. That's Rav Ada Bar Rava. Abai and Rava say no. We don't care about flattening the peg. The very fact that the peg is on top of the surface, top surface level of the post, makes that surface level unusable for the entire width of 4 tefachim. Right? So you could use this part of the top of the post and this part, you know, you could work around the peg. But you can't enjoy the benefit of the full 4 tefachim because you have this peg that sticks out somewhere in the middle. And I couldn't care less what the size of the peg is. Even if the peg is 1 tefach high, it's enough to disturb and serve as an obstruction in the use of the top surface of the post. Now Rav Ashi, let's see how, I said Rav Ashi is using the peg to hang his hat on. Now the peg is on top of the post, so I'm a little bit confused. Rav Ashi says, Afilu gavah shlosha, my taima efshar, the talya be'mid, it's possible to hang something on the peg. So I'm assuming that, you know, let's say 10 tefachim is, you know, shoulder height. So when I take off my jacket, if there's a peg sticking out of the top of this post, I can hang my jacket on top of the on top of the peg. That's what I'm assuming. He writes, the peg performs a function of the post. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what he means by function of the post, but it serves a function. And therefore it's considered part of the post. I don't know if it has to have a function of the post. Again, I would have said it's enough that it enhances the use of the post. I'm not exactly sure what he does with this post. And it doesn't detract from it. Well, that makes sense. It doesn't detract because it enhances. So that's what we have here. Amalei Rav Acha Brei Derava L'Rav Ashi. According to you, Rav Ashi, that use of the peg to hang something up on the peg is something that enhances the use of the pillar or the post is Milo Kulo B'Yesedos Mahu. What would happen if he filled up the entire surface of the post with many, many different pegs? Maybe we should say that that's also not a mute, because he can use each one of these different pegs to hang something on it. Or shall we say, no, at this point, you know, the post itself is left with absolutely no surface area. It's just a bunch of pegs. Amalei, Rav Ashi responds, Lo Shmilei, I didn't hear anything. I'm sorry. Amalei, so Rav Ashi responds to Rav Acha Brei Derava. Why do you ask me this question? Lo Shmilei, did you not hear? Ha Diyomer Rabbi Yochanan, Habar V'chul Yasa Mitztarfin Liasara. If you have a bar that is 5 tefachim deep, and around the surface level, the ground level of the bar, you have a chulia, you have a pile of dirt that's 5 tefachim high, then we can integrate, we can add the 5 tefachim above ground of the chulia with the 5 tefachim of the bar below ground to establish the bar as a reshus hayachid, because it now has the depth from the top of the chulia to the bottom of the bar of 10 tefachim. Now, what does this have to do with the price of fish in China? So he says here that kishem shemitztarfim, just here's the analogy of Rav Ashi, just like in the case where we mitzarif, we integrate the omek habar with the gova of the chulya, and we set up a sum total of 10 tefachim, kach mitztarfim ovi achulya im rochav chalal habar lahashlim lerochav arbot fochim. He says the following. Let's say that the subterranean part of the bar is not 4 tefachim wide, but on top in the chulya we have a width of 4 tefachim, and somebody stands in Rishus HaRabim and places something down on top of the chulya. He'll be chayav for Rishus HaYochid because we're going to be mitzaref the width of the chulya. We're not talking about the height of the chulya. The width of the chulya together with the airspace of the bar, and we're going to end up with an area that is 4 tefachim wide. The impression I get here is that the chulya is sort of like slanted, if you follow what I mean. Well, what example could I give you? I don't have a good example now, but it's like if you were to have an ice cream cone. So the cone itself is narrow, and then it gets wider on top. So too, you have a bar that might be narrow, but it gets wider on top, because the chulia is sort of like on a slant. You know what I mean? You sort of like, you know, shave off some of the inner part of the chulia as you go around, and the chulia now gets a larger width. Okay. Now, we're still not, you know, around the bases. We still have to figure out how this has to do with the question that was asked to Rav Ashi. So first, Rav Ashi is going to try to explain this halacha of Rav Yochanan. V'amai, why is the top of the chulya considered a reshus hayochid? Halo mishtamish le. He says here, "Hare ein berochav hachulya v'abar makom shel arba tefachim sheyochel ishtamish behem sherei chalal abar eino roy l'shimush." He says that the width of the chulya, as it relates to the bar, does not really give me four tefachim. The four tefachim is really on the outer lip of the chulya. But the inner circle, so to speak, of the chulya does not give me a width of four tefachim, like we said before, like shaved on the inside around. So you cannot use and benefit from the chalal habar for four tefachim. He won't get the shimush, the benefit of a width of four tefachim based on the inner circle of the chulya. Elamai yislach lemeimer. So the only way we can understand Rabbi Yochanan and be mitzaref the chulya to set up a halal of four tefachim wide is the menach midi umishtamish. That apparently he's going to put something on top of the opening of the bar and it's going to lay down and rest on top of the chulya. In which case he's benefiting from the outer lip of the chulya, which is four tefachim wide. It's hachinami, oh, now we get to the punchline. In our case where he knocks pegs into the post, the manach midi umishtamish. And he says that makes the use is enhanced. In other words, he's enhancing his benefit possibilities, broadening his benefit potential. The manach midi mishtamish. So now, I think what he means by manach midi mishtamish, we'll take a look in the translation, is that he can set up some sort of a platform on top of all these yesedos, and he can place things on top of the platform. So the yesedos themselves, the pegs on the top of the post, are actually beneficial for him, and he gets use out of them. Just like we said, that he can place some covering over the chulya, and therefore the expanded four tefachim of the chulya is considered beneficial to enjoy the halal of the bar, because he can cover the bar with a chulya. It's like covering your, you know, swimming pool during the summer months, so the bugs don't come in. Here also, he can cover his bar and protect it from the elements, because he wants to drink the water in the bar, by placing some sort of covering over the chulya. And he's saying that the more pegs you have on top of the post, the easier it is to cover those pegs and use that platform for whatever you want to use it for. Let's just see if you can hang in there for a minute. Hang your pegs for a minute and see how he translates it to English. Rav Acha said to Rav Ashi, if he filled the entire top surface of the post with pegs, what's the law? Do you consider the top of the post a Rishus HaYochid, even when there are so many numerous posts that he cannot use the surface of the post. The surface area of the post is basically completely covered by pegs. Amalei, so Rav Ashi said to him, did you not hear that which Rav Yochanan said, a pit and its bank, so he calls the chulia bank, okay, fine, combined to a height of 10 tefachim. Similarly, the pit and the bank combined to the width of 4 tefachim, rendering the entire area shusay yachid. But why? Why does the surface of the bank, like the top of the chulia, why is that considered a shusay yachid? The entire surface of the pit is not usable. Part of it contains the hollow area of the pit itself. But rather, you can say, to explain Rabbi Yochanan, that one can place something over the mouth of the pit. I said it was a covering. He says it's something. Okay, he calls it a board. And make use of the entire surface width, which, is, as we said, on the outskirts of the chulia is 4 tefachim. Here, too, since you could use the entire width, is you can place something, again 21, a board, across the top of the pegs and make use of the entire top surface area of the post. If nothing was placed atop the pegs, the top of the post is still considered Rishus HaYachid. In other words, just like the bar is considered Rishus HaYachid, even though right now he hasn't put any sort of a board on top of the chulia, otherwise he couldn't throw anything into the pit, but nevertheless, the potential of covering the bar with a board on top of the chulia, that makes it into Rishus HaYachid here too. Even if he hasn't covered any of the pegs that are knocked into the top surface area of the post, and certainly has not put a board on top, but nevertheless, he could potentially put a board on it, and therefore the posts do not negate or undermine the use of the top surface area of the post, but on the contrary, they may make it even easier by allowing placing a board on top. So even though the board is not yet placed, nevertheless, the pegs do not undermine the status of this post, of this amud, as a Rishus HaYachid. It remains a Rishus HaYachid. That's the Shita of Rav Ashi. Now, I'm wondering if I can find... I was hoping to find a footnote that would explain why all the other Amoraim rejected Rav Ashi. Right now I'm not finding it. So let's go on in the Gemara. Amar Rav Yudah Mar Shmuel, Kosel Asara. Okay, so now we're back to our original sugya. Two chatzeros that is separated by a wall that's 10 tefachim high, and he wants to be mevayit the wall, is Tzarech Sulam Arba Asar Latiro. You cannot measure the ladder from the bottom to the top of the ladder as 10 tefachim and say, according to review, that that's called a mute, because the ladder is not standing vertical smack up against the wall. You have to allow for a certain distance because the ladder has to be on an incline leaning on the wall. How far is the ladder from the wall? 4 tefachim. Therefore, the sulam will have to be 14 tefachim. Why? Because we're going to sort of subtract the 4 tefachim that we need to distance in order to get that incline, and we're left with 10 tefachim height, which will take you all the way to the top of the kosel that's 10 tefachim. So if you have a kosel that's 10 tefachim high and you want to get used to the top of the kosel, you're going to need a ladder that is 14 tefachim high. So says Rav Yudah, the name of Shmuel. Rav Yosef Amar Afilu Shloshasar Umashu. In other words, according to Rav Yosef, you don't need a ladder of 14 tefachim, because if he sets up this distance between the legs, you know, the bottom legs of the ladder and the coast of 4 tefachim, then he will be able to climb this ladder and reach within one tefach, the top tefach that separates the top of the ladder from the kosel. He doesn't have to reach with his ladder the top of the kosel. As long as he's within and less than a tefach away from the top of the kosel, that's fine. That's easily accessible. Abaye Omar, afilu achadas or mashu. We don't have to consider, says Abaye, the distance between the kosel and the wall, adding an extra 4 tefachim. Why? Because we don't need that he end up on the top of the ladder within a tefach of the top of the kosel. We need that he end up on the top of the ladder within 3 tefachim of the top of the kosel. So if he has 11 amos in the height of the wall, then by definition, he's going to reach within 3 tefachim of the top of the kosel. Let me just go over the mathematics one more time. So he's got a ladder that's 11 tefachim high. And right. So if it's 11 minus 4 is 7. And 7 plus a mashuhu will get him within 3 tefach, meaning less than 3 tefachim to the top of the kosel. Rav Huda Breda Rav Yishomar afilu shiva umashu. Which means that even if the ladder is flat up against the surface of the kosel, meaning it's totally, absolutely vertical, and it's 7 tefachim high, and we're accepting the principle of Abaye, that he has to reach within 3 tefachim of the top of the kosel. So once he has 7 tefachim, he is, by definition, within 3 tefachim at the top of the kosel. Even though the wall, the ladder is absolutely vertical. In other words, forget about the 4 tefachim that we added because of the necessity of a distance in order to have the ladder lean up against the kosel. And here he has a note, and he writes that Rav Huna Sovir Kedas Rav Lehalon. Okay, so we didn't get to Rav yet. Shesulam Zakuf Mimait. That even a ladder which is absolutely straight up and down vertical is Mimait. Ukshamamido Bizkifa. And once you set up this ladder as being flat up against the wall, you are with that 7 tefachim height of the ladder within 3 tefachim to the Rosh HaKosel. Now the obvious question that we have to address when we get to Rav is to figure out how a ladder could be functional if it's smack up against the wall. Amar Rav, Sulam Zakuf, now we're up to Rav, Mimait. Why is that so? So Rav himself didn't know why. Gemara means that's how I learned it from my Rebbeim, that was the tradition that was passed to me. V'lo yadana my time, and I didn't understand why. Omar Shmuel, V'lo yada Abba. Abba is an acronym for Rav, or some say that Rav's name was Abba. We call him Rav, he's the Rav, you know. Like my Rebbe, they called him the Rav. In Satmar, it's the Ruv. Okay. How could it be that you, Rav, don't understand the reasoning for Zakuf? Now here I also have to tell you the honest truth. This is where I got stuck. Let's take the case of Itztaba Gabi Itztaba. So we had a board. Right, a flat board, and underneath it we had another board. And we had to get the Yarba Tfachim, and we said, it doesn't matter whether the bottom Elyona, the top Elyona, or the bottom Tachtona, one of the two has a board, and the two boards that are attached to the Kosel are within three tefachim one of the other, and therefore we view this as one entity, so we can get either the four tefachim width from the top platform or from the bottom platform. It didn't matter. Fine. That's called Itzvah al-Gabi Itzvah. So what does this have to do with Sulam Zakuf? I mean, the whole purpose of the Sulam is to be able to climb up the ladder. I don't know how you're going to climb up the ladder if it's flat smack against the wall. So I'm going to read to you the footnote, but the only thing intuitively that I came up with I'm not happy with at all, is that the rungs of the ladder themselves are itztabos. Each rung of the ladder is like an itztabah. And assuming that it has the width of four tefachim, then it's no different than an itztabah. So he says in the footnote that Shmuel Pirish Asvar Ledas Rav Ulam Hubiatmo Sover Shes Sulam Zokov Enomamite. Right, it was Shmuel who required a Sulam of 14 Tfachim, adding 4 Tfachim in height in order to make up for the distance between the Kosel and the feet of the of the ladder. So we see that Shmuel himself would not justify a ladder that's smack up against the wall. So the Sfas Emes wants to understand, according to that, how is Shmuel going to differentiate between Itztaba al-Gabi Itztaba and Sulam Zakuf? And he answers that Shmuel held that Itztaba is kavua. It's more permanent. It's like an attachment to the kosa. But a sulam is not permanent. You move it around from place to place. And in order for it to function and enhance your use, to your ease to climb up the roof, to climb up the wall, you're going to have to assume that it's on an angle. And it's not zakuf. It's not absolutely vertical. But again, this footnote is very nice, but it doesn't really help me so much. Let's just see if by chance he has a note here in the English. He says, a ladder that's vertical, okay, that we got right, reduces the height of the wall. And Shmuel says that it's similar to the case of a platform on top of another platform, which effectively reduces the height of the wall, even though a vertical ascent was need to reach. And I think there's a printing error here. It should say was needed or will be needed or something. I don't know. To reach the upper platform. He could have done a better job, if he asked me pedagogically, but I'm just going to tell you what I think is going on here. The equation, the analogy to Itzva Gabi Itzva, is that if we're going to set up a relationship between one Itzva and another, which we have to do in order to arrive at four tefachim for Miut, what we're going to have to imagine is somehow getting from one Itzva to the next. And that's a vertical climb. And if we view the sulam also as like one itzvah on top of another itzvah, then, you know, you remember we had a different case of itzvah, which was gradual, which was moving in a kind of a slant direction. Do you remember that? That was earlier on Daf Ayin Ches. What exactly was the case? That was, give me a minute here, Rabosai. That was the case of the Ziz. Right, oh, you had the case of Kosel Shel Esrim, Shnei Zizim Latiro. Do you remember that case? So we had a ladder leading up to one platform, and then on the far side of that platform, we had another ladder leading up to a second platform. So all I'm trying to point out is that in the laws of Zizim, or it's the Bos, we need somehow to get from one itzdabah to the next. And I have a beautiful diagram here in color of getting climbing up to one itzdabah and then from that itzdabah to the next itzdabah. And it moves in an angle, you know, not like a 90 degree angle, it climbs towards the right. So why do I mention this to you? Because perhaps we could say that in the case of a sulam, l'chora if it's zakuf, how are we going to get from one rung to the other? To be mamaitis kosa? And the answer is, itzdabah gabi itzdabah. But he's talking about itzdabah gabi itzdabah in the classic scenario where there's no way of climbing up from one itzdabah to the next. In fact, the picture that he has of itzdabah here, no, that's not correct. That picture is a case of sulam sheshlivosav parchos, which we said is like a step ladder. So again, Rabbi Yochanan himself was not impressed by itzdabah gabi itzdabah, because itzdabah is kavua. And therefore, sulam zakuf, which is not kavua, and I don't think it functions very well in getting from one rung to the other, would not be effective to be memait. That's according to Rabbi Yochanan. What I'm still unclear about is Rav Shita, why Rav would actually validate a sulam zakuf as mute, based on the way Rabbi Yochanan, the way Shmuel interprets it, an analogy to the case of itzdabah al gabi itzdabah. Which apparently it becomes very challenging to figure out how you get from one itzdabah to the next. Except for that case of Zizim, where you have two different platforms on two different parts of the kosel, and then you get from, with a sulam, you get to one, and then from one to the next. But here we're talking about one sulam that's akuf. Omar Rabba, Omar Abchia, Dekolim Shebebavel Enom Tzrichim Keva. Let's say he builds his wall right next to a palm tree. And he could climb up the palm tree in order to get access to the top of the kosel. So that palm tree is now memait the kosel. And Enom Tzrichim Keva means that you don't have to actually set it up on a permanent basis, attaching it to the karka. My time, why is that so? Why is this palm tree, these palm trees in Babel, why are they memayit? And that's going to allow tiltul if you have an eruv between the two chatzeros. So he says over here, Mipnei sheyesh aleihem toras kli. Right, this is a whole new curveball here. Shera'uyim heim liyeshiva. Imagine a tree, a palm tree in this case, that has many branches coming out, and you could sit on any of the branches, and those branches now have the status of a kli. And we said before that if you have a kli she'eino nital mimkomo, which means that it's a very heavy kli, like remember we spoke about the sulam of Tzur, which has four rungs or more, and it's very heavy, you don't move it around, that has the potential to be memait. And here also, the branches of the tree are very heavy and they're set in their place. Kvedim v'kovatam. In other words, they are so weighty that the weightiness of it sets them up as permanently fixed to where they are. and no one's going to move him around. And I guess he's saying that you, if you're a monkey, or maybe if, even if you're a human being, you can climb up the various branches of this Babylonian palm tree and reach the height of the Kosel. And therefore the tree is Mamayit. Well, let's see what he says here in the English translation. Babylonian palm trees, all right, sections of the trunks of the palm trees, okay, I call them the branches that come out of the trunk of the palm trees, and it was placed against the base of the wall. Although they may be removed on Shabbos, they need not be attached to the ground in order to reduce the height of the wall. It's like the lowest, I called it a branch, he calls it a section of the trunk, is not at the, it's not on ground level. Right? Need not be attached to the ground. And the reason for this is because these sections of trunks affect reduction. Ah, he's explaining what bothers the Gemara. If you're allowed to remove, I guess it's not attached to the ground, so you could move it. And we said that if it's movable, then it's not Mamayit. So how do we understand Rabbah? So Gemara says that because of their heaviness, they are attached to their place, which I think means that we don't move them around. The trunk sections were heavy, and they were not usually moved. Ah, so he compares it to the Sulam of Tzur. So that's the opinion of Rab. Rav Yosef Amar Rav Oshia, Babylonian lattice, Sulam of Shebet Bavel, Enom Tzrichim Keva, Maitaima Kvedon Kovasam. Okay, so Rav Yosef agrees, he concurs with Rab. So let's just see the difference between the two. Rabbah spoke about Dekolim Sheba Bovel. Rav Yosef spoke about Sulamos Sheba Bovel. And in both cases, Rabbah's case of palm trees and Rav Yosef's case of ladders, they are Mamayit because they are considered heavy and attached to their place, and people don't usually move them around. Mandi Omer Sulamos. Now the Gemara analyzes the, is there a machlokes ledina? According to Rav Oshio, says that what? That we're talking about Sulamos and Machmas Kvedom Kovatom. Kvedom Kovatom is Kolshkein de Kolim. How much more so the trunks of these palm trees? They're immovable. They're even heavier than the ladders. But Mandi Omar de Kolim. But if you go with Rav Chiya's understanding that they only could use the palm trees as a mute because those are immovable, Aval Sulamos lo, but ladders are lighter than de Kolim, and therefore they can be moved and they would not be Mamayit. Boy, Minei Rav Yosef mi Rabba, Sulam mikan v'sulam mikan. Vikashin ba'emtza. He's got very thin ladders. And if that be the case, he has to somehow link the two ladders together in order to get the four tefachim minimum width to be mamayit. So let's say each ladder was two tefachim in width, but they're separated by an airspace in between. So what does he do? He takes straw, and he attaches the straw to that middle between the two sulamos. Mahu. In other words, can we consider now the two ladders as one ladder? And the straw will now bridge, like an adhesive tape, the two ladders together. He says in the Hebrew translation, he says, Hish'in ala kosel shnei sulamos, v'rochav kol ech mehem pochos mi'ar betfochim, u'kdei lahashlim rochav arba tfochim hirchikam ze mizeh. So he sets up a distance between these two thin sulamos, such that now the outer sulam on both sides are separated by four tefachim. And between the two sulamos, taka kashim shel tvua, ke'ein shlivos shel sula. All right, you know what? If you put straw and you attach two ladders, that is not going to give you a very sturdy, heavy-duty weight, you know, rung. So Amalei, therefore, Rabba responds to Rav Yossi's question, Ein kaf haregel ola bahem. He cannot climb up by placing his feet one after the other on these rungs made of straw. He'll just simply break the rungs. And therefore, in that case, Sulam ze shebem tzau kovim kashim eino roy lekach vi eino moel lemayit. So it doesn't have the ability to be mamayit. So now Rav Yosef enhances his question, takes it one step further. What about the case of kashin mikan, the kashin mikan, the sulam boemtza? What if he sets up the sulam in the middle? Again, the sulam in the middle is, let's say, two tefachim wide. I'm just giving an example. He sets up another kind of ladder that parallels all the rungs of his original ladder, of his wooden ladder, and he makes two of them on each side. And the rungs are made of kashim, of straw. Now the distance between the outer two extremes is now four tefachim. Mal. Amalei hare kaf regel ola bahem. In other words, he can climb up this ladder. Now the question is, okay, he climbs up the ladder, but the ladder itself is not four tefachim wide. So what benefit does he get from the additional add-on rungs that are made of kashim? So he writes here, Ru'uyim l'shimasha ole b'sulam, sheyachos ben biyodov bialoso b'sulam. He says that as he's climbing up the ladder, he grabs onto these two outer ladders, so to speak, that are made of a relatively soft substance, and therefore this sulam is memait es hakosel. So this leads us to Daf Ayin Ches Amud Beis, which is where we're going to stop for now.